It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Ah, yes, here we go. The final broadcast week of August 2019 begins right now. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. Just run over to HeadOn.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right into the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat room during the hours in which this program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday, and 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. And not a lot of folks in there during the other times, just, well, because. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is, in fact, the 26th day of August 2019. A comfy 77 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Clouds have rolled in, and it's cooled off considerably today. Although, the fact of the matter is, if you do pop into the Horn chat room, you'll find that you'll find yourself moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a spacing guild master, a third stage guild navigator, he's not folding space today. He's staying right where he is because, well, there's a big old nasty weather service alert for the northern Sacramento Valley, in effect from today to midnight Pacific time Tuesday night, with highs between 105 and 110 degrees, with the hottest being tomorrow, Tuesday. So it's a good reason not to fold space. Good reason to make sure that people you care about out in that neck of the woods are appropriately cooled and hydrated and not being harmed or at risk from that heat, which, of course, has nothing to do with the great Chinese hoax that is climate change. More on that in a moment, being as how it's more in Monday. But every program here, it begins with gratitude. So thanks go out over the weekend for our subscribers for the 24th. That would be Pamela and Josh and Samson and James. And then on the 25th, thanks go out to Kay, Mark, and Jim in Spain. And the 26th, Milton and Peter and Michael in Madison. Those are our subscribers. They receive our gratitude on this Monday because they, along with all the other subscribers, take care of about a quarter of our fundraising needs each and every month, the happy slightly more than 100. On the way, maybe someday, to the, two, three, four, whatever. But the beauty of it all is that we have here fundraising free radio for the next 5 days, an opportunity just to do radio as though this program were funded by some limousine liberal billionaire, but it's not. But it'll be nice just to do the program. So thank you to everyone who made that possible. Like I said, it's more in Monday. And we've, anytime that Nitwit Nero goes abroad, you know there are going to be more in opportunities. Odd, but as once again, the takeaway photograph from the G7 summit isn't actually Nitwit Nero. No, it's his wife Melanoma. The Slovenians, no, Melanoma looking at Pierre Trudeau with the greatest of longing in her eyes, as Julius Geezer has her by a couple of knuckles, not even holding her hand, has her by a couple of knuckles, as if he's trying to drag her along, and she's saying, "Help me, Pierre!" Well, that's true. Again, it's an early cowbell on this Moran Monday. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, well, hell, not only could Sparky fold space at those temperatures, he could steam clean and press it as well. Now you understand why the cowbell. Yeah. Now, you can't fool me, says Steve in New York. I saw your Maybach here in New York City. Well, that's only because it's been, like, stolen, okay, before I could even purchase it. Right. Yeah. But like I said, it's Moran Monday. And, gosh, well, I guess we'd better just, oh, not Pierre, Justin. Justin. I can't keep my Trudeau's straight. Yeah, his name is Justin. Help me, Justin! You're my only hope, blah. Justin, yes. Justin. Ah, yes. Thank you for the correction to the Ad Hoc Horn Research Department and Bob Correction Department. Justin. Yes. I was a few decades off referring to his daddy, but nonetheless, the longing look in her eyes remained. She was wearing headphones during, Emmanuel Macron's address at the G7, and everybody said, wait a minute, we thought she spoke French. Well, I mean, she does. Leave the money on the dresser. Placer l'argent dans le bureau. But not much more than that. But she wasn't even listening to the translation. She was listening to Edith Piaf songs as she doodled Mel Hart, Justin, Jamais, Toujours Jamais, in her little G7 program. Yes, you know what? That's very good, Jack. Justin Trudeau. Imagine him speaking to her in a Pepe Le Pew voice. No, not Pew. Le Pew. Pepe Le Pew is my name. My little cauliflower. It's too early for that. Yes, indeed. We've had a bumper crop of trench goats and sex clams and morans this year, says Steve in New York, and we squirtingly have. Looks like things are streaming swimmingly along. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on hot on board the Moran brain train, chugging down the tracks. Riding that train high on disdain, Bob Kincaid, you better watch your speed. Yes. That was on the fly. Clever, huh? Disdain instead of... Yeah, oh, well, yeah. So, by all means, let's get this started.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Thank you. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. Hey, you, up over there on the Carnival Midway. Quit chucking those ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in the vain hope of bringing home a baby iguana. Get on over here. It's Moran Monday on the Horn, and right here behind this cybernetic veil of canvas are Morans beyond your wildest imaginings. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, maggots, trumpanzees, libertarians, evil-jellicles, Republicans all, for your amazement, your disgust, and your general entertainment. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Right here. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Our subscribers make sure that the Moran Monday tent is available for less than 15 cents an hour for every $10 a month subscriber, plus every other program through any given month. Yep. A general warning as we open the tent flaps, that people entering the Moran Monday tent keep a close eye and a close hand on watches, rings, jewelry, bangles, bracelets, necklaces, pendants, wallets, purses, backpacks, small children, pets, that iguana you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, and yes, even European style messenger bags, as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. You will. We're gonna. We already are. Oh, dear God. The weekend began with some news about Sister Clerk Kim Davis and Matt Bevins, the God-fearing, disease-spreading governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand, but we're probably going to be a few minutes getting to that. I'm not even going to let Nitwit Nero have pride of place for this Moran Monday. No, I'm going to start right here in my home state. Little old beaten and bedraggled, worn out and put upon, almost level, west by coal, Trump Genius Stan. Yes, that's where we're going to begin. Because you see, Bernie came a calling and drove the white wing, the fossil fools in this country into paroxysms of ignorant stupid, and that's spelled with a capital stoop. Up in Morgantown, where Bernie spoke, home of the university where I matriculated. Well, we call it Harvard on the Mon, some of us do. Bernie spoke in Morgantown, and he talked a little about energy and so forth. And nothing, and I do mean nothing, makes people who have spent a lifetime sucking at the coal-blackened, greasy, poisonous teat of big coal get the fantods faster than talking about the existential crisis that the human species faces in the near-term future. Enter one such by the name of, he's a professional broadcaster who goes by the name Hoppy. Enter Hoppy Kercheval. I think if we take that from the original French, it probably means Hoppy Horse Heart. Kercheval. So,
Hoppy, who has, in fact, been one of those for going on 35 years or so, has had his lips locked determinedly upon the teat, the coal black, greasy, toxic, oily, filthy teat of the coal industry. Hoppy gets to write editorials for West Virginia Metro News. Now, West Virginia Metro News is a wholly owned subsidiary of anybody that produces anything hydrocarbon. Oh, wait, we got to back up because I got another cowbell. Lady B with a note regarding melanoma. Hell yeah, she speaks French. Christian Dior, Givenchy, Chanel. Every call girl needs expensive clothes and perfume. Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir, bitches? Precisely. Matriculated, asks Ron in Raleigh. They have treatments for that, and you could wear those man diapers. Well, I was thinking more about sandpaper gloves I had to wear to keep me from matriculating so much. I mean, right. It's going to be one of those nights, isn't it? Yeah, apparently. And that's another cowbell for Ron. Metro News, and Metro News has never met a carbon molecule with which it did not want to have a deep and abiding love relationship. Well, son of a gun. There we go. Buffered up and quit there for a minute. Sorry about that. And so when Bernie came to Morgantown and started talking about his energy plan, now let me just share the first paragraph with you, because it goes back to something I've been saying. Presidential candidate Bernie Sanders has unveiled his version of the Green New Deal. The Democratic Socialist characterizes it this way. And in a proper, if the text had little sound effects attached to it and stuff, there would be 1950s horror movie shrieking and screaming after the words, Democratic Socialist. And this past Saturday, I took an hour and had a little chat with our dear friend Tara Devlin over on TerraBuster. And I talked about that phrase, and I've talked about it here, but this is another chance to reiterate the reality and the truth of what I say. I, honest to Jesus, wish that Bernie had never introduced that godforsaken phrase into our body politic. Because for way too many Americans, Democratic Socialist is like a germ. It's like a bug, a virus that makes them weak in the knees and prone to fits and hallucinations of, I don't know, everybody having to get up in the morning and sing the Internationale. Democratic Socialist. When anybody with a brain recognizes that what he's talking about is good old-fashioned Merkin, big AAA, so's we all can understand FDR democratic policies. You know, the same sorts of things that have saved this country once before after the Republicans, using a metaphor that has been much in my mind of late over the last month, after the Republicans spent, 10, 12 years driving America into a ditch. But no, we get democratic socialism. So that the multimillionaires and the for-profit media have something to fulminate about. Because in talking with Tara, I realized something. I talked at some length about my parents. I love them dearly. They were not perfect. But for a pair of kids who graduated high school in 1943, and that was the end of their formal education, they were pretty smart people. But even they, had they heard the term democratic socialist, probably would have not been well inclined toward the term. Because it's always attended every time some member of the multimillionaire for-profit media uses it by nightmare visions of Americans having to stand in long lines to choose from only one brand of breakfast cereal. Democratic socialism! On the other hand, with my parents' generation, and they're mostly gone now, if you said to them, we're going to go back to the New Deal policies, the New Deal style policies of FDR, my mom and dad would have said, cool, where do I sign up? When do I get to vote? I'm all for it. Saved our country once before, it can probably save our country again. Yeah, but no. And we know the truth of this because Hoppy, who is nothing if not a right-wing conglomeration of ignorance, bigotry, fear, and paranoia, worked it in to the first paragraph. The Democratic Socialist characterizes it this way. A 10-year nationwide mobilization centered on equity and our humanity, during which climate change will be factored into virtually every area of policy, from immigration to trade to foreign policy and beyond. I got to work on my Bernie some. And because Hoppy can't trust Emery and Marveline living up the holler and living the dream in their double wide with their matching Barca loungers, he has to interpret Bernie speak for them. That's another way of saying he proposes a government economic takeover that will eliminate the use of all fossil fuels, reach 100% renewable energy by 2030, radically remake farming, unionize 20 million people in new energy-related jobs he's supposedly creating, and even pay $36 billion to bribe Americans to replace their front yards with vegetable gardens. Bribe? Shit. If I had a tiller, I'd plant the front yard, the backyard, the side yard, and the other three-quarters of an acre. Bribe? People have to be bribed to have good fresh food that hasn't had fucking Roundup dumped on it? Bribe. You see now why I rocketed this jackanapes to the top of the Moran Monday stack? Holy shit. Because, of course, the Hopster doesn't mention here that those 10 years are all we have to keep climate change from fundamentally altering our long-term viability as a species. You'll notice the Hopster worked in all the things that make his masters go into paroxysms of terror. What's that? We're going to have 20 million unionized people in energy-related jobs? Right. Because that would be terrible. 20 million people in unions. 20 million people with dignified pensions, retirements, health care, the ability to collectively bargain for wages. God, that wouldn't even be murka no more, would it? We wouldn't be murka if the big money wasn't able to shit on the little people at will. He goes on in his. The funny thing is, you read some of the things that he puts out there as details to terrify Emery and Marvelline and make the people who make his checks clear, maybe, you know, give him a little more love. People with a brain read this stuff and go, hey, it doesn't look so bad. Taxpayers will pony up more than $3 trillion to finance a buyback program for gas vehicles to be replaced by electric cars, school, and transit buses. And this is supposed to be a great deal because, according to Sanders, the government is taking over all power generation in this country, so the electricity to run all these vehicles will be virtually free by 2035. Wait, you mean we're not going to have to subsidize some motherfucker's fourth vacation home in Vail, in addition to the ones in Aspen and Martha's Vineyard and... I don't know, Ono Island. We're not going to have to subsidize those anymore? Poor, poor CEOs. Poor, poor, poor bedraggled little billionaires with their noses pressed up against the window panes as we sit in our renewably powered homes and they stand out in the freezing winter, just like the little match girl selling carbon-based energy to a world that neither wants nor needs it. Jesus, this is Jimmy. Jimmy, this is Jesus. God. So we're all going to be driving electric cars and riding electric buses? The horror. The horror, I tell you. I'm going to have to get a China marker and write down where those sounds are. I didn't want the harp. I wanted, you know, that. Blue for the Twilight Zone. Okay, I'll figure something out. But the best part is when he says that the only people who take this seriously or even like it are environmentalists. I guess environmentalists is now what we call people who would like to see the human species survive long enough to reach that Star Trek part of civilization. Yeah. Then this. But the New York Times quotes Joshua Fried, vice president for clean energy at the centrist Democratic think tank Third Way, And frankly, never mind whatever it was that Joshua Freed said. It's the idea of referring to Third Way as a centrist Democratic think tank. Because it isn't. Not by a long shot. Turns out, and if I can find it, this is one of those... this is one of those stories that I've hung on to for a while. There it is. I've hung on to this for half a month. There's a book that came out not too long back. The Intercept published it. The name of the book, and you may recognize the surname of which the first syllable of the book's title is comprised. The name of the book is Cokeland, and it's not a retelling of the Halcon days of Studio 54. No, it's K-O-C-H Land. The author is Christopher Leonard. The Intercept published the book. And it turns out what did the Hopster call it there? Centrist Democratic Think Tank Third Way. Well, the money for founding Third Way, the centrist Democratic think tank, was provided by Koch Industries. You know, David Koch, who, yes, here on the 26th day of August 2019, like Generalissimo Francisco Franco, is still dead. Yay! Now, Koch Industries quietly and secretly funneled money to create a report by Third Way that would prop up the Koch's oil business. The name of the report was Why Lou Dobbs is Winning. It was issued back in November 2007. In the report, and I'm sure if you bought the multimedia version, it came with scary music. A new and popular populist strain has emerged on both the left and the right of American politics that threatens to turn the nation fearful and inward. Now, don't think for a minute that anywhere in the report was a little statement that says, "Gee golly gosh, we'd really like to thank Koch Industries for all the money they pumped into helping us produce this report to help keep their hydrocarbon business afloat on a burning planet." Nope. So once again, the tentacles of the greasy, oil-covered Kochs finds its way into the body politic. And shame on the New York Times for quoting Joshua Freed. And by the way, this is
Sanders' plan appears to be big but not serious. We need to have every option on the table.
By that, Joshua Freed of Third Way, brought to you by Koch Industries, means we need to keep burning hydrocarbons until human beings just can't live on the planet anymore. Yeah, maybe by then Elon Musk will have gotten done with building his spaceship to Mars, and well, all the Kochs and the libertarians can go and breathe CO2 while we little groundlings sit here and suffer on an incinerating world. And by the way, in case you were wondering, one of the two Democrats who jumped aboard that report, Why Lou Dobbs is Winning, back in 2007. Well, he's not in the House anymore. That would be Representative Joe Crowley of New York. Speaking to Politico in 2007, he said, "We all have to begin to speak differently about trade, how it benefits the economy and foreign policy, how it helps Americans and people abroad." He's the one who was replaced by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in 2018. Joe's okay, though. He went on to a lovely career as a lobbyist. The other member of Congress, Melissa Bean of Illinois, well, she landed on her feet at J.P. Morgan Chase and stayed there just long enough to be named a chief executive of a wealth management and advisory firm. Third way, y'all! Hint, it's not a way for the rest of us. It's a way for the 1%. Closing his piece, Hoppe points out that 56% of American adults say protecting the environment should be a top priority for the president and Congress. Hoppe notes, however, Sanders' scheme, it's not a plan, y'all, it's a scheme, will likely turn off moderate Democrats who know a foolhardy fantasy when they see one. So we can't be paying attention to the things that are desperately needed if the United States is to continue to survive. Because see, we cannot burn hydrocarbons out of this problem. We can't drill or frack or mine our way out of climate change. But morons like Hoppe Kirchival, well, the check keeps clearing, so they're never going to point that out. Third way. And along the way, of course, Hoppe pointed out that 90% of West Virginia's energy comes from the burning of coal. I guess by that what he means is that there are blockades at the state lines of all the highways that cross into West Virginia that would prevent solar panels from coming here. I mean, after all, one of the things that the Republican legislature did was to make sure that you, by God, can't buy a Tesla automobile in West Virginia. Not that many West Virginians can afford them. But you can't have one. And so there's no way that us ignorant hillbillies could ever figure out how a solar panel works. Even West Virginia has companies that specialize in installation of solar panels. And I don't know if anybody's told the old hopster or not, but there are actually, and I saw a photograph of one. Our buddy Ron from the far soon-to-be refrozen north is down here on his natal stomping grounds and was out with his sister recently. And she snapped a photo of Ron getting perilously close to one of those wind cancer-inducing windmills. No, don't do it, Sparky. Don't do it. Don't tell me they're wind turbines. I know they're wind turbines. But Chlamydia Claudius says that they're windmills and that they cause cancer and keep us from being able to watch TV at night, darling, when the wind's not blowing. Darling. Get to the doctor quick, Ron. This community cares about you. And stay away from those windmills, even though they're already here in West Virginia. Jesus, the stupidity of these people. The United States can do anything that it wants to. It's a question of political will, not economic ability. We can have a clean energy future. We can have a future. But we cannot have a future that includes the oil barons, the coal barons, and the frack barons. Because that's not a future. That's a funeral. But Bernie's crazy, right? Yeah. Ron and Raleigh noting, obviously, these are the same people that desperately want to hold on to their employer-provided health insurance because they love copays, asking permission for procedures, and wading through plan changes every damn year. They're as rare as freaking leprechauns. I have yet to see one. Damnedest thing. Well, even though it's late in August, something must be blooming because I'm sneezing like a wild man here. Steve in New York. I'm surprised Hoppy didn't say, you know, union as in Soviet Union. Well, he didn't have to. The mouth-walking knuckle-breathers that actually think he has something to say understand that that's taken as read. Downtown in La Crosse, Flavio tells us, there's an Office of Americans for Prosperity. I walk by it every day, and all I can do is scowl and curse under my breath. Otherwise, I think I'd get in trouble. Yeah, spitting on the buildings, probably. There's probably a statute. Or at least a city ordinance. Although extending the middle finger to them as you walk past them, I think that's still political speech, Flavio. Not that I'm encouraging you to do that. No. But Bernie. Bernie wasn't just in almost level West by Cold Trump Ginyistan. He also took a swing through the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand. He went to Louisville and stood with AT&T workers who were on strike there. And then, being right smack dab in Kentucky, the home of Moscow Mitch, whom I don't think, well, once upon a time, it was a not done thing for one senator to go to one of his distinguished colleagues' states and raise hell at him. Those days are over, though, and Bernie got big cheers for taking the fight to Chinless Mitch.
I say here in Kentucky to Senator McConnell, stop blocking legislation from coming to the floor of the Senate. Live in a democracy. The Senate is entitled to a debate, and the American people are entitled to know how you vote. Stop your cowardice. Have the guts to debate the issues.
Yeah. You tell him, Bernie. Coward? Coward? I'll swear, did he call me a coward? Elaine, go out there and take a broom handle to that poltroon. How dare he call me a coward? What, huh? Oh. Yeah. It is cowardice. He knows, among other things, that a whole bunch of his own caucus despise him. And he's afraid that if he gave people a vote on some of these bills, like, the gun bills that are soaking in a pool of congealed innocent blood on his desk, that they might just break ranks with him and he'd wind up on the short end of the damn stick. Bernie went on to say workers in Kentucky and America cannot get by. I love how it's Kentucky and America. There's Kentucky, then there's America. Workers in Kentucky and America cannot get by on $9 or $10 an hour. They need a living wage. If you'd like to explain to over 500,000 workers in Kentucky who are making less than $15 an hour why they do not deserve a living wage, that's your prerogative. Well, you see here, Bernie, those people making $10 to $15 an hour, they're the ones that go And they vote for me every 6 years. Because I tell them that I'm going to protect them from a godless commie, pinko, panty-waist, sissy, liberal, socialist like you. And you know what, Bernie? It works. But just a moment on the $15 minimum wage bill that Moscow Mitch won't allow to come to the floor. Let's talk about that for a second. Show of hands. If that bill were to pass the Senate tomorrow, and I know we're engaging in just the worst kinds of speculation at this point, if that bill were to then be sent from the Senate to the President of the United States, this is pure fantasy, and Nitwit Nero was to get out his order signing Crayola, you know, the big first grade one, for his tiny little hands. And he signed that law the $15 minimum wage law. And he did it this year. Next month, when Congress comes back. Mitch realizes the error of his ways and lets the bill, right. And by October, we've got a $15 minimum wage law. Show of hands from all of those who know when people would start making $15 an hour. Now, this is, of course, the Horn Family Community Congregation, so there's a lot of hands up right now because we're pretty well plugged in and we understand what the hell's going on. But just in case there's any weird little mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing maggots out there, the $15 minimum wage would take effect in, wait for it, 2025. At which point in time, a $15 minimum wage would probably need to be a $20 minimum. There's a way around this. We can stop having to have minimum wage fights. One way to do that would be to, yes, make it so that every American who wants to be can be a part of a union. And then the union can collectively bargain for a real living wage, with a real pension. The other way is to engage in a little bit of legerdemain, the legislative variety, and tie it. But this is, of course, a capitalist enterprise. So what do the capitalists do when minimum wage goes up? Well, they raise the price of goods and services so that they continue to get the same percentage of hardworking America's paycheck. That's going back to the Hopster there. That's part of why he was having a baby. Because if electricity in this country really was run by the government, it'd be a little like Social Security. You wouldn't have all those executives to have to coddle and pander to. And it could become very nearly free. And that scares the living bejesus out of the people who know which fucking fork to use with the shrimp versus the oysters. It's almost like it's baked in or something. That's some catch, that catch 22. It's the best there is. And my apologies here in this program for the 26th of August, 2019. I find myself playing hide-and-seek with the stream. It's raining a little bit here in the hills and hollers of Almost Level West by Cold Trump Geniusstan. And that means that Frontier's internet service has decided to run and hide under the bed. We have buffered up and shut down at least three times now. I've caught it, and it comes back. I have no idea why. The internet Knuten valve shows no problems whatever with the flageolet. Nothing blinking, everything solid. But it just quits because, well, Frontier does such a fantastic job of maintaining a for-profit infrastructure. I don't know. Maybe the CEO needed a 24-karat gold potty or something. Eileen in New York says, you've got a seriously bad connection. Every time you try to play something interesting, it goes to that, you're listening to the horn thing, scream. Well, Blame that on Frontier. Had a service call out here. They told me there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Yeah. Frustrating. So I'd say we're off to a pretty good running Moran start. I applaud Bernie for having the courage to go in and raise hell. Sounded like a pretty good crowd too, didn't it? Go in and raise hell in Addison's backyard. It's going to be a tall order to beat Moscow, Mitch. But just because sometimes we don't do things, just because something is hard doesn't mean we don't do them. Sometimes we do things because they're hard. Wasn't it John Kennedy who said that? We choose to go to the moon not because it is easy, but because it is hard. Wasn't it something like that? Noble, laudable. Breaking news just before airtime. A verdict was rendered out in Oklahoma stand. The state of Oklahoma sued Johnson & Johnson over the opioid crisis. It was not tried to a jury, it was tried to a judge. And I didn't know there was a Cleveland County, Oklahoma, but there is. And Cleveland County District Judge Thad Bachman reached a decision against Johnson & Johnson. He made a specific finding that Johnson & Johnson was liable insofar as it knowingly misled doctors and the public about just how addictive opioids are. And in the course of that, he entered a judgment against Johnson & Johnson for some $572 million. Now, that $572 million is supposed to go directly into the, well, I mean, after you take out the lawyer's fees, it's supposed to go directly into the coffers of the state of Oklahoma for a plan to try to solve the opioid crisis in that state. Now, let's remember, and let's separate this from the opioid crisis itself for just a moment. Let's remember that Oklahoma is a deeply red Republican state. Oklahoma is a state that didn't accept the Medicaid expansion. They may be Republicans, but they know politics when it's slapping them upside the head. Ordinarily, lawsuits like this are the kind of thing that Republicans rail against. You know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the American Center for Judicial Freedom and the American Enterprise Institute and the Capitalist Enterprise Institute and the Conservative Enterprise Institute and the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation. But the problem is, there were Republican people dropping dead because of the corporate conduct of outfits like Johnson & Johnson. Now, one of the real bad guys in all of this, conduct far worse than that of Johnson & Johnson, Purdue Pharma, Oh, no, they walked up to Oklahoma and said, now see here, you Okie. We've got a check for $270 million here. And we'll fund some drug research looking for a cure to the opioid crisis. We just want out because we're afraid if we walk into a courtroom and try this case, somebody's just going to write down the numeral one and start writing zeros until their hand gets tired and cramps. And then we won't be able to afford 24-karat gold toilets anymore or 16th vacation homes in Aspen. Oklahoma Attorney General Mike Hunter, a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, who has also been involved, by the way, in lawsuits to overturn the Affordable Care Act, just in case you were wondering. He said, they made money whether they sold their drugs or when somebody else sold opioids because they were supplying everybody else. And this 1% thing, that's complete canard. I don't know what a canard is, but somebody told me it was one. I think it's a kind of duck. Johnson & Johnson was betting that a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual judge, like that district judge in Cleveland County, Oklahoma, being as how he had good conservative values and credentials, wouldn't dare do something that a jury would do. They gambled and lost. But they're not weeping there at Johnson & Johnson headquarters just right yet, because they're not out any money. And they know that they're going to appeal the case, or they'll maybe offer to settle for less money. But they'll probably appeal the case to the Supreme Court of Oklahoma, where, of course, there are a bunch of maybe more friendly Supreme Court justices. People who understand the value of having a 13th vacation home in Vail. Or maybe Tahlequah. Barring that, they'll try to get it up in front of old Balls and Strikes Roberts and Sammy Shoot the Black Kid in the Back of the Head 30 Feet Away Bad Breath Alito and Ann's Boy Neil and Brat Kavanaugh and Clarence Slappy Pubes on the Coke Can Thomas, who's married to a woman who's part of a right-wing activism firm that rails against things like legislating from the bench and judicial activism, and try to get the Supreme Court breathlessly declared, why, my goodness gracious, we can't let a poor but honest oil company be destroyed with punitive damages, even though punitive damages are meant to punish and sometimes destroy. We can't do that. Why, they're job creators. Poor old Oklahoma doesn't have an attorney general like West Virginia does. Here we've got pill pushing Patty Morrissey, whose wife is a lobbyist for an opioid company, and who himself has worked for the opioid companies. And he settles cases against opioid companies for pennies on the dollar. Because that's what he was put there to do. So the families in Oklahoma who have lost loved ones to the desperate determination of CEOs and CFOs and COOs to buy that platinum-plated Porsche. Well, it's going to be a while before anything good happens there. And who knows? Maybe Chinless Mitch will decide that there needs to be a opioid company protection act. Nah, it probably wouldn't be good going into an election year, would it? It's about a month ago when the Washington Post had a story. It came out of Ohio. The Washington Post got hold of some leaked emails from a pharmaceutical corporation called Mallinckrodt. Sounds like something you cure with penicillin, if you could afford it. Victor Borelli, who was an account manager for Mallinckrodt, he was communicating with Key Source Medical Vice President Steve Cochran. And he said that 1,200 bottles of 30-milligram oxycodone tablets had been shipped. And Steve Cochran said, "Keep them coming. Flying out of there. It's like people are addicted to these things or something. Oh, wait, people are." Dot, dot, dot. And Victor Borelli responded and said, "Just like Doritos, keep eating. We'll make more." In a just world, people like that would face some sort of rather harsh and draconian punishment. That attitude, keep them coming, just like Doritos, they'll eat more. That cost 47,000 American citizens their lives to overdoses just in 2017. And even as things like pharmaceutical opioids, deaths from them begin to decline, guess what? Deaths from fentanyl are beginning to go up. Not beginning, they're going up. Because in what William S. Burroughs in Naked Lunch referred to as the algebra of need, you will do whatever you need to do to solve the equation of your addiction. Pills, heroin, fentanyl. And yet we think that there's some sort of a cure to all of this. Now, this is going to sound a little crazy, but it's possible that the actual solution is called maintenance. Help people get clean if they can get clean. And for those who can't, help them maintain something resembling a normal life. And there are drugs for that. the ultimate irony, of course, is the notion that maybe at some point, thanks to these settlements with the drug companies, we may actually be able to provide care to addicts in states that won't provide care to their citizenry. Like I said, Oklahoma does not have the Medicaid expansion because communism. Ponder that for a moment. Well, I don't know if we'll have connectivity for this or not, but you probably heard the jingle there that I have still not managed to be able to make go away. But I think we got Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Hank. How are you?
Okay, I'm doing good. So far, it's working. Keep your fingers crossed.
I was listening, and your jingle's showing.
Yeah, I know.
you know,
gremlins.
Oh, sorry. Wait, I was listening, and then I'm like, wait.
That's what I love about knowledge base based tech support. I don't think anybody actually knows how to solve these problems, Tracy. But they just send you down some rabbit hole to find out that nobody knows how to solve these problems.
Nobody knows how to solve these problems, and they just keep going on and on and on. Well, I heard about the lawsuit that, of course, like you said, is gonna, you know, they're gonna appeal the settlement and all that. Can I file a lawsuit on behalf of the members of my family and my community at large against the Reagan administration for the devastating effects of crack cocaine?
Yeah, sorry, no, because that was patriotically necessary to keep the commie hordes from pouring from Nicaragua across the Rio Grande all the way, you know, keep them from Nicaragua, Guatemala, Mexico, and then keep them from pouring across the Rio Grande and stealing all our freedom.
Okay, because I was, you know, because it. I mean, and of course, you know, I am not discounting what people are going through because of the opiate crisis. I am definitely not, but it really pisses me the fuck off because, you know, when it was black people, we're criminals, and white people, oh, they just need rehab and help. Black people, we go to jail, and you know, and so, I bore witness to the, you know, what was happening just in my family alone. And you know, if I watch one more episode of another television news show, and they're interviewing, you know, some white grandparents talking about how they're taking care of their grandbabies, and I'm like, gee. My mother took care of, let's see, not one, not two, not three, but four of her nephews. I took care of one of my nephews, okay? And that's just my family. You know, my grandmother couldn't take care of anybody, you know, of her grandkids because she was hooked on crack. Yes, my grandmother. So, you know, I mean, and I'm not talking about, you know, that she had a drug issue before. No. She started smoking crack just because it was something that, you know, big deal, you know, not, no different from weed at the point, I guess. And then she got hooked. She finally got herself together. But she did wind up dying as a result of, you know, respiratory failure because of, you know, her addiction to coke, I mean, to crack at the time. So it's like, so where's our compensation?
It'll be included in the reparations check.
Oh, okay. Reparations, that's right. I'm the reparations, you know, because I just, and this is when people say our country is not racist, I'm like, then what is it? I mean, why is it, what is, I don't see that there's no difference other than the fact that opiates, you know, were manufactured here in this country. That's the only, and by the pharmaceutical companies, and they're, you know, they were legal. Other than that, I don't see a difference between, you know, people being hooked on opiates and people being hooked on crack cocaine. I mean,
meth. I mean, meth is American made. It's cooked in CD motel bathtubs all over the country.
And don't forget trailers. Motor homes, as in Breaking, you know, mobile motor, you know, this,
yeah,
this
Breaking Bad.
Bad.
Yeah.
Didn't he have a mobile home? That's where he
started.
Yeah,
an RV. Yeah.
An RV. Motorhome. So what's the difference?
America.
Is it because the opiates were basically, you know, suburban housewives? Is that what it is?
Yeah. There's a certain amount of that.
Oh.
It's sad, but it's true.
And, like, when during the HIV and AIDS epidemic, the only reason why anything started happening is because, I don't know, the right people started getting sick and dying.
Yeah, when it finally happened to somebody famous, well.
Yeah, well. It's like, oh, okay, now maybe we should do something about it. So, I mean.
But, I mean, look, there's a long history of this. Remember, still dead David Koch. Only got interested in medical philanthropy after he got prostate cancer.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I was reading, when I was in Vegas over the weekend, I had no idea that he had died. And then I Googled his ass, and they said philanthropist. I'm like, what the fuck? Philanthropist or how? And then he just said, how did he profit, or why did what made him decide?
Well, just remember, for every dollar he gave away, he had a small army of accountants who took those deductions.
Of course, but like, look at what happened when all of a sudden, Nancy and Ronnie decided that they cared about stem cell research only because Ronnie was a babbling idiot because of Alzheimer's. So, now we want to know about stem cell research because it could help with, Alzheimer's. So, I don't, when people like that get interested in diseases, there's a catch. There's a reason. It's not because they care. It's because
No, it's because in the, that saying that's old and tired in legal circles, it's because their ox was getting gored.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
And that's that's different from the rest of us. Because we're down here working every day, and we have a certain amount of empathy for our fellow human beings.
Mm-hmm.
But for the Kochs of the world, it's like looking down from an airplane on people walking on the ground. We're like ants to them. They can they can squash us or at will. And remember, all these philanthropic donations that were made by the Koch Foundation, there's two of them. There's the David Koch Charitable Foundation, and then there's the Charles Koch Charitable Foundation.
Uh-huh.
And if you go back and read an extremely informative book from a long time ago now, by David K. Johnston. It's called Perfectly Legal. And it explains how these gazillionaires leveraged and abused the tax code to set up family foundations, where they then hid their money to keep from paying taxes on them. And so that's why those foundations exist in the first place. Bill and Melinda Gates have one. The Kochs have one. Some of the loopholes were not closed, but at least narrowed. But the reason that David K. Johnston's book is called Perfectly Legal is you look at it and you think it ought to be a crime.
It ought to be.
By the way, you got a note from
Todd
in South Carolina, Stan. Crack was the Republican way of fostering small business in the black community.
Oh, well, there's that.
I got to ask,
I refuse to watch Snowfall.
Are you home from Vegas?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, we got home. You talk about perfect timing, and I meant to check on Billable Rick, but I know the fire. So we got home. I came home, you know, did laundry, cleaned the house and all that good stuff because, you know, energy. And apparently, we had just got ahead of a fire at the 2 and the 134. They closed down the freeway, and that's the way we come home. There was a brush fire, and I think they just said they reopened it earlier this morning. But we were ahead of it. Because I was watching the news yesterday afternoon, because we got home at about 2. We typically leave Vegas. We have a routine. I do my workout. We check out. We hit the slot machines one more time. We check out. We hit Cracker Barrel. I know. Racist, blah, blah, blah.
Tracy. But
I know that it was racist. Well, I didn't know, okay? And I like their...
You like their country fried snake. I know. Everybody does.
No, I don't. I don't do that. It's the hash brown casserole or whatever that is.
Oh, well, yeah, the sides are pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. So that. And so, and then we hit the road. And so... You know, because we hit some traffic, but mostly no. And we're usually home by 2. So we have the rest of because I don't understand people who stay in Vegas late on Sundays and they have to be at work on Monday. That's just stupid. But anywho, yeah, there was a fire. And so we're like, oh, good God almighty, thank God we got ahead of that shit. And, but I was just like, yeah, but Vegas is great. Cher, fucking amazing.
I was waiting for the concert review.
Dude, okay, first of all, I think she had like 18 costume changes.
Yeah.
And yes, she still can wear the outfit she wore when she sang Believe in whatever that was, the 90s or whatever, and she still looks good. There was a couple of times I know she was lip syncing, but I don't care. I mean, the production values of that show were amazing. She, her dancers were great. She talked. There was this couple. There's two songs that she did with Sunny. She did more than two songs, but you know. I Got You, Babe, and The Beat Goes On. Well, what she did was she had video of Sunny and her singing, but she was singing with Sunny on the video. So she was on stage singing, with Sunny on video. And it was just in perfect sync.
Kind of like when Natalie Cole sang Unforgettable with her dad.
With her dad, yes. And it was really, I videoed it. I'll send you a clip of it. I meant to send it the other day. But she looked amazing. I had no idea because I Googled her because I've never really, I never knew her background, but I didn't know she was half Armenian. Did you know she was half Armenian?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Once I read that, I'm like, oh yeah, okay. As soon as I read that, I'm like, oh fuck yeah, she's a half Armenian. You know, especially when you look at her before all the plastic surgery. But I was like, oh yeah, fuck yeah, she's half Armenian. I could see it in her face, in her facial features, and I was like, yeah. But wow, no, she had. And the show was about, it started at 8, well, it was supposed to start at 8. She didn't have an opening act. It started about 8:40. And it was about an hour and a half show. And for somebody that's 73 years old, that's pretty damn good.
You know, she and Dolly Parton are basically the same age, 73.
Right.
So, I loved Dolly Parton's line once upon a time about the work she'd had done. She said, "Honey, it costs a lot of money to look this cheap." God bless her.
God bless Dolly Parton. Well, that's what Cher said. She's like, I don't get up looking like this. And she's like, I got a whole team of people that make me look this good. Okay? So, I mean, and that's what I love about Cher. I mean, she acknowledges that she's had a lot of work done. I mean, and so, but she, you know, she's like, look, I'm fucking 73 years old. And I can do whatever I want to do, say whatever I want to say, and, you know, so be it. And from what I understand about, because I went to a Weight Watchers meeting while I was there, and apparently she's a very nice person. Because I guess one of the women there was telling her son or somebody she knows has worked with Cher on her couple of her shows, and she's like, she's very generous, very nice, cares about her crew, takes very good care of her crew, and she hates Trump. So right there.
Did she troll him at all on stage?
She did. She sort of did, but she's like, not to the point that she does on Twitter. But she did a couple of, you know, she did some underhanded digs, you know. But she trolled. I mean, I don't know who's worse, her or Bette Midler. Actually, an actress. God, I can't think. I think her name is Natasha Roswell. I think that's her name. She's a sister. And ever since, this takes pure dedication. Ever since what's his name got elected, every single day she tweets them and says, "At the real Donald Trump, you are trash."
Nice.
Every single day. If that's not dedication, I don't know what it is. Every day.
So now that you're home in L.A., I want to run an L.A. story past you, because I saw it mentioned over the course of this weekend.
About the trans women?
Yeah, the what is it? It's a restaurant and club, Las Perlas?
Yes.
In downtown L.A.?
I saw downtown L.A. I had never heard of it until I saw the story. And
do you even go to downtown L.A.?
Not by choice.
Do most Angelenos even know where downtown L.A. is?
They do now, because downtown L.A. has, within the last 2019, beginning in like the early aughts, they started gentrifying downtown L.A. And put, you know, because basically, I used to work in downtown L.A. back in the day. And after 6 o'clock in the evening, nothing was, you know, once people went home from work, nothing was going on in downtown at all. And then they started, because they got these really cool old buildings, these historic, you know, old brick buildings and warehouses and all that.
That just scream gentrify me.
Yeah, just scream gentrify me. And so then they started. So the developers started coming in as per usual. Well, first it started with Staples Center, and then they started building up around the Figueroa Corridor where Staples Center and the Convention Center is. And they started building these high-rise condos and apartment buildings. And then...
Yeah, what, about 400 a month?
Yeah, 400 a month.
Yeah, about 400 a minute, yeah.
And, but then the Great Recession, you know, because they were supposed to be, you know, people were supposed to buy them, and then the recession hit, so they started renting them out, and then the economy started picking up again, and then so they started building again, and they started going further and further east. which went in, you know, where most of the homeless population were in L.A., downtown. And so now these buildings are going further and further, things are going further and further east, and now all of a sudden, within the last 10 years or so, we now have all these people living in downtown. I mean, there's Trader Joe's down there. There's a Target down there. A really gorgeous Rouse, Smart and Final. I mean, it's an up-and-coming neighborhood. I mean, you see the white people walking around with their dogs. That part. So now, you know, so you have all these, you know, upscale restaurants and bars and stuff like that jumping off. And so, like I said, I'm 53 years old. I don't hang out down there. That's millennial bullshit. I don't, you know,
you're just not that hip anymore.
I've never been that hip. I've never really have been. You know, but even when I was not a millennial, but the age of, you know, and when I was in my 30s and stuff, I was a mom. So I was a single mom. I had when I was in my 30s, Alex was, you know, I had an 8-year-old when I turned 30. So, yeah, no, I wasn't doing all that hanging out and all that other bullshit. But when I read that story, I was instant. I was just like,
So the background on it is a trans advocacy group went to a place called Las Perlas in downtown L.A., and a pair of the trans women were apparently minding their own business when, and, you know, this bears reminding, yes, Southern California has its fair share of good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual bigots, Christians. And apparently they went out to the bar that night, those aforementioned.
Those God-fearing Christians, what were they doing at a bar? Wasn't that like a
witnessing,
Saturday
witnessing,
night? Didn't they have to get ready for church?
Witnessing, Tracy. They were witnessing for the Lord.
Oh, that part. Okay.
Yeah, and they decided to start referring to a couple of the trans women as men.
Yeah.
And proceeded to goon on them. And nobody, and despite complaints, nobody in the restaurant or bar staff would ask those two bigots to leave.
Nope.
And so when the trans women decided they'd had enough, then the bouncers came in, manhandled, and I don't mean that in any, I mean, it's a term. They rousted the trans women. Put them in headlocks and stuff like that. And hauled them out. And, you know, when a hillbilly in West Virginia is seeing this stuff, you know that it's made it into the consciousness. But,
yeah.
the simple ability of people to sit and have a couple of cocktails without having a couple of people who are...
assholes.
Scared to live in the modern world.
Oh, that part, yeah, but still assholes.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, assholes. And so I guess instead of opening last night, this joint just stayed closed.
Oh, yeah, there were protests, and
the LAPD is investigating it as a hate crime.
Hate crime, yep. Exactly.
But it doesn't have to be this hard. I guess it's Rodney King time again. Can't we all just get along?
Well, this morning, Jan was a little worried about me. I went to, because I don't know, if I joined it, you know, the Y, to, you know, because I'm learning how to swim and stuff. So this morning I decided to go to the Y out in Thousand Oaks, Agora area, because so I could start practicing in the morning, because I was going to start going to the one that I joined, but it because of where it is and the time factor, it would just be too hard to get there and do a workout and decent workout and try to swim and all that and get out to Agora to pick up Kenny. But then I realized, I'm like, wait a minute, there should be one relatively close to her out in Agora Hills or Thousand Oaks or what have you. And there is. Oh, my God. Wow. This, you know, this place.
Taj Mahal.
Yes. I mean, they have jacuzzi. They got a warm pool and a cool pool. I mean, just they have a cafe, Bob. They have a freaking cafe. How many wives have you ever heard of that has a cafe, you know, with an espresso bar, and they have an outdoor track? I mean, it this place is just, you know. But because of who I am, you know, I don't know if you know this, but I'm black.
I heard a rumor.
I don't know. You heard a rumor. You heard tell. So even Hugh, you know, Jan knowing, you know, the people that are, you know, finally referred to them as, you know, the Melanin Challenge, she was concerned, you know, that because when I left, it was still dark, you know, me driving out there, you know, in the middle of the, you know, before, you know, the sun comes up, and just because people are stupid. I said, well, you know, it is the why, and people tend to, you know, it is, you know, family oriented and all that, but it's still, you know, white people. And I did get a few looks when I walked my happy black ass up in there. But, you know, I don't care. I have a membership, and I can go to any Y fucking CA I want to, YMCA that I want to across the country. But for the most part, nobody said anything. I mean, for the most part, everybody was pretty damn friendly, but there was a few glances. Again, I don't care. But, you know, but Jan, and, you know, but Jan is right, you know, is rightfully concerned because of where we are and, you know, what kind of country and we live in now. And as you, you know, demonstrated with the story about the two trans women, you just can't go anywhere anymore and just have a drink. You know, I don't present, you know, there's nothing that shows me, you know, outwardly. I don't have on, you know, you can't look at me and say, ooh, she's a lesbian, you know. Nothing that says that, not that I'm ashamed of it or anything, but there's really nothing that, you know, screams at my appearance, outward appearance, that I'm a lesbian, but, yeah, nothing I can do about me being black. But,
I've got to mention something. You said nothing I can do about me being black. Asa, a few minutes ago, said, Cracker Barrel? Oh, my God, Tracy's bleaching out on us.
Well, see, it's not. See, this is what pisses me off. It's the fact that before, you know, I didn't know anything. You know, I have been going. I didn't know anything about the Cracker Barrel being racist, and I had gone there, and I didn't know anything about, you know, Chick-fil-A being, you know,
hateful.
You know, just hateful. Because I've gone there and I've seen, and they have gay employees. So it's like, is there any place that I can eat as a black lesbian that, you know, that is not?
Oh, wait till you see the fast food list of corporations that support Trump. There's nowhere you can go.
There's nowhere I can go.
Or me.
Any clothes that I can wear? I remember that there was a whole debacle about the CEO of Under Armour and Stephon Curry was like, I will walk. Because I guess he's one of their biggest spokespersons or whatever. And when it came out that he, old boy, was a Trump supporter. He's like, yeah, I won't wear your shit anymore.
Well, it's like the
the controversy that boiled up over the weekend, and I guess maybe a few days before, and whatever it is, it's an absolute masterstroke of marketing. You know, we all know that I have an abiding, as fast food goes, I have an abiding passion for Popeyes. I love that spicy fried chicken. I love the sides. That so-called Cajun gravy, just, you know, I'd mainline it, okay? I would.
I know you would mainline the gravy if you could. And so what's happened is they came out with a chicken sandwich, and everybody's trying to say it's better than Chick-fil-A.
Well, they encourage people to judge for themselves. And so there have been, like, huge lines at the drive-thru at Popeyes with people trying to get their hands on this chicken sandwich, this fried chicken sandwich. And the funny part of it is that nobody's mentioning the fact that maybe the reason people are so eager to have it is because it would give them somewhere besides Chick-fil-A to get a fried chicken breast sandwich. Because
yep, that part.
A McChicken from McDonald's?
It's horrible.
Oh.
As bland as I am black.
And, you know, the Wendy's, no.
No, not so much.
And if Popeyes is moving in on Hateful A's turf, or Chick-fil-A's turf, then there are a lot of people that will eagerly go to Popeyes, and somebody in the marketing department deserves an award for that.
Because they know.
But God almighty, didn't it just... It brought the you-know-whos right out of the woodwork.
Yeah, when you sent me what his name said, I'm like, mother.
Yeah, Newt Gingrich took his hood off long enough to tweet. I've got it handy right here. Newt Gingrich quoted this morning, this was Sunday, Newt Gingrich quoted this morning making the rounds on Sunday morning talk shows, "I wonder how many black folks caused traffic jams waiting in line at the drive-thru to get a fried chicken sandwich or registered to vote."
Quick question. Isn't Newt Gingrich from Georgia?
Well, was. I mean, he doesn't like to have anything to do with it now, but yeah, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist and allegedly professional historian, and he's the adulterer who is married to the adulteress who is the ambassador to the Holy See at Rome now. I don't know how the Pope mm-hmm. managed to not make her gargle with holy water.
Here's my question.
She's the one that he was banging like a cheap gong, while he was howling about what a philandering sinner Bill Clinton was.
Right. Well, here's my question. Yeah, there's probably a lot of there's probably a lot of black people who would love to register to vote, but especially in the state of Georgia, you know, maybe what's his name didn't keep them from voting. That part.
Yeah, well,
you know, this little thing called the voter suppression. You know, so shut your ass. I hate white people, present company excluded.
Thank you.
I mean, and I hate.
Is it okay if I hate him too? Because I got a feeling I've been hating him a lot longer than you have.
Yeah, because see, I've never really until really seriously. I just had a mild displeasure for most people, you know, because I didn't really pay attention to politics. I mean, except for Reagan because of AIDS and the crack cocaine crisis in my community. So I had a strong hatred for Reagan. So there was that. And Bush, you know, he just annoyed me. Bush 1 and 2, these motherfuckers, it's just, cause like I didn't even really pay attention to the whole Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton thing. It didn't affect me because again, at that time I was pretty much a new mom. I was a single mom trying to raise a son.
tragedy with not being homeless. I had other things to do. And the thought of the fact that they were fucking around with Bill Clinton because he got a blowjob was just, I'm like, did he sell state secrets? Did he commit treason? Did he try to sell the country down the river? Is the economy is okay? Everything is going okay? Fuck, why do I care that he got a blowjob? Moving on.
Well, today, today, Nitwit Nero, because it is Moran Monday, made up a complete, not that it's a surprise, fabrication.
About melanoma?
No. No, this was a different lie. There's so many, it's hard to keep up, I understand.
How do you keep up, though?
Well, he said that he had had he said the government of China called him and asked to restart talks over his Chinese tariffs.
And they called me, and we're gonna and they wanted it. They wanted to restart. So I'm a great deal maker,
right? There's only one problem. Just in, China's foreign ministry spokesman Greg Geng Shuang says he has no info on phone calls to U.S. cited by Trump, adding later, I can tell you clearly that I haven't heard of such a thing. In other words, it was a complete lie. And I read the story earlier today, and I said, oh, if only it had been about a blowjob. But then again, he's lied about a blowjob.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them, probably. Stormy and who's the other one? I can't remember.
I don't remember this.
By the way, you know, talking about photos on the radio is a little dicey, but that picture of her of melanoma looking yearningly at Justin Trudeau. The best caption I saw for that all day was, "Oh no, I ain't kissing that mouth. I know where it's been." I mean, that's so. That caption was so much shade. It's probably 15-20 degrees cooler in it.
Cooler.
And by the way, just so you'll know, Ron and Raleigh is a troublemaker.
What?
Tell Tracy, she should go on down to Santa Barbara to the last Sambo's restaurant. I'm sure she'd feel real comfy there.
You know what? That's some bullshit. For real, dog. You really went there with Sambo. Wow.
Well, that's Ron's job. By the way, you got a note from Billable Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Brush fire at the intersection of the 134-2 freeways, and that's written 134/2. So that seems like an odd integer. Please thank Tracy for her concern about the possibility that I may have been in harm's way from the recent brush fire. I'm fine. The fire burned about 5 miles south of where I live, so my house was never in jeopardy. Plus, and this part sounds a hell of a lot like an alibi to me, Tracy, you tell me. Plus, I was in the OC mm-hmm. with the lovely Star during the weekend when the fire broke out. A likely story.
Mm-hmm.
A likely story.
Sure he was.
Probably,
sure.
Rick's Sith powers were frustrated by not having been able to penetrate the veil of the Force surrounding the lads, and so mm-hmm. it just spontaneously burst out into a laser beam brush fire off of the 5 9/16.
That part.
Yeah.
That part too. No. You know, speaking of my trip to, you know, because of course when there's a road trip, you have to have music. So I was listening on the way, all the way pretty much to Aretha Franklin. And then it sprang into my head about Steely Dan because, you know, hey, 19, that's Aretha Franklin. So I'm like, okay, let's listen to some Steely Dan. And then I started reading about Steely Dan. Why didn't somebody tell me that Steely Dan was is the name of the dildo in the book?
Well, I mentioned the book earlier this evening, Naked Lunch by William Burroughs.
Naked Lunch, and that's what that's
it's not. And it's not just any. It's not just any. It's a giant stainless steel.
Stainless steel dildo. When you said Naked Lunch, I'm like, holy shit. Get out of my head, Bob, because seriously, because I had never heard of the book Naked Lunch. And so when you said Naked Lunch, I'm like.
Well, see, I'm convinced that one of those two guys, either Becker or Fagan, were big. I mean, we know they were big William Burroughs fans. But I think they were Raymond Chandler fans, too, because we've talked about how I've been plowing through the Raymond Chandler canon.
And right.
And so I was finishing up a book called The Little Sister last night, and I told you, he's meticulous with all these street directions. And he all I read was, I turned left on Sunset. No, I turned west on Sunset. That's all it said there. And then my DJ brain kicked in, and I start hearing, turn west on Sunset to the sea. Turn that jungle music down just until we're out of town. You know, Babylon Sister.
Your Babylon Sister.
Shake it.
And I texted you. I'm like, okay, don't judge me. I'm listening to Silly Dan. I mean, damn Apple Music, because it's just, I have to say, I mean, because some of the algorithm is just really stupid, because, you know, a lot of times when I'm doing my run and my, speaking of running, this morning I actually ran for 20 minutes without stopping.
Whoa. I give you 3 years before your first marathon.
I've done a marathon. I ran the Chicago Marathon back in 2001. Was it 2000.
Damn, 26 miles?
26.2.
.2, damn it. Don't you cheat me out of those 2/10.
No, don't you cheat me. Don't you cheat
me out of those 2/10. Them 1,056 feet.
26.2 miles. I've ran a marathon. No, I didn't, and I won't put my body through that again. I at the most, I may do a 10K. As far as, you know, the torture, because I can honestly say, how many people can say that they've done a marathon? I've done a marathon, and I did the following year, I did the Walt Disney World Half Marathon.
That's just crap. What happens for the rest of the day? How do you recover from that?
Well, actually, because I trained for 6 months for that, and I was fine. The worst part, now I had some major, what happened was, because I should have been able to do it in about 6 hours, but by mile 18, I did something to my sciatica, and so it took me longer to run the last 8.2 miles than it did for me to run the first 18.
Ow.
And I was so
determined. Oh, that's a side of you I didn't know about.
I thought I was running to raise money for AIDS Project Los Angeles. I don't know what got into me to do this. I have friends that died from AIDS. And I had a friend who was battling HIV. So I took it upon myself. I couldn't do anything else. I couldn't, you know, what else could I do? I had volunteered. I had done angel meals and all sorts of things. But this was just something that I just felt that I had to do. And I did it. And I couldn't believe that I did it. And then I didn't run again after that. It's like, okay, I'm never running again. But now my running now is on a whole different thing. This morning I couldn't believe it. I ran 20 minutes and I wasn't tired. and I was listening. It's the thing. Running your best is a training program now. It's a run your best 5K, and so it's building me up to do a 5K. You know, because the first 5K, well, it wasn't my first, but the recent 5K, I walked the whole thing. So my next 5K is in about 4 weeks from now, and I plan on running the whole thing. And so this is to help build up my endurance so I can run the whole 5K. We shall see. At this point, I can run 20 minutes.
I have no doubt.
You know, I feel very accomplished that I can run 20 minutes, considering that back in June, I could barely walk a half a block without, you know, having to stop to catch my breath. I'm still horribly overweight, but I'm in probably better shape than people who weigh a lot less than me. I'm pretty sure that I can outwalk. I was talking to my
sister. I think you're probably better. You're probably in considerably better shape than the President of the United States.
Well, that's a very low bar, Bob.
It's still a bar, and you're over it.
It's still a bar. Yeah, I'm over it. And I was telling my sister, who's like, you know, a buck 50, so, you know, she's skinny mini. She's one of those people that are naturally skinny, and I can't stand people like that. Her and my baby, both of them, their father was just, besides being a child molesting rapist, but he was a naturally skinny person. When she was here, I was telling her that I can't run like that. So that made me feel good that my skinny little sister can't run like that. You know, so I'd say you can't run like that. So that made me feel good. But it's just, you know, just to know that I can move that much. Just the fact, like I said, that I can touch my toes. And it's so funny because, you know, this is like the first time that I've actually worked out. Well, when I was in, we were staying at the Paris Hotel in Vegas. And yesterday night, all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it was actually the first time that I've actually worked out in the gym since I started working out. Because typically I work out at home. And so I like the looks, the side glances that I get from the skinny bitches who, you know, they see me, big girl, but then they see how flexible I am, that I can bend down and touch my toes and touch under my feet and not do splits, but, you know, do really deep lunges because, you know, people see somebody that my size and they automatically assume that I have very limited mobility. Or when I'm on the treadmill, which is this, because I've met Friday was the first time I've actually used a treadmill, really, because I've never, all the running and walking that I've been doing in the past 2 months, well, going on 3 months now, has been outside. I have never really used a treadmill before. So getting acclimated to, you know, working, you know, getting the speed right and stuff like that is kind of scary because you don't want to go too fast. Because I've seen those videos of people falling on their faces on the treadmill. So I had that, you know, that thought in my head. So, you know, trying to get it, you know, to the right speed. But to see them looking at, you know, you can tell when people are looking at you. And so, you know, but to see them going, you know, watching me, knowing that, thinking that, oh, she's not going to be on the treadmill long. And I'm running for like 20, you know, 15 minutes straight without stopping or 20 minutes straight. And if I wanted to, I could have kept going, but it was, you know, I had time constraints. So, you know, I love when people think that you can't do something because, you know, they judge you without knowing shit about you. And so to exceed people's expectations is pretty fucking awesome, especially.
Well, I just wanted to make a little suggestion. I've seen the videos that
that get shot on your ring, you know, video.
Uh-huh.
And it was breaking news over the weekend. There's a new line of athleisure wear out there.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking it's just the right thing for you. It's the Tommy Lauren Freedom Athleisure Collection, because it's even got places where you can stick your gun. Freedom Protector.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the text that I sent you earlier on her Twitter feed, how people were going off on her about having the black models? Like, she gives a fuck about black women.
Yeah, right, yeah. Well, and also the fact that it is made where?
China. Which reminds me of vagina. That she will shoot, somebody will shoot off. Why would... I just don't understand. Yeah, so we have Tommy Lauren has a line of $90 yoga pants to hold your gun in. And by the way, I have a shirt that I think I sent you the picture of that I'm going to get in various sizes now that I found the manufacturer that makes it. It says straight out of shape, but bitch, I'm trying.
Beautiful.
And I wore that when I was in Vegas, and I people actually asked me to stop and took pictures of the shirt because they're like, please, I have to take a picture of your shirt because it says everything without me getting into fights. I say, yeah, because it's for people, you know, those people who give you side eye for, you know, having a cookie or eating pasta or whatever the case may be, because, you know, they feel that if you're a certain size, food or enjoy your life or anything like that. And it's like, fuck you. You know, I'm not skinny, but, you know, I could probably outrun most people now. And fucking Tommy Lauren. You know, I don't like calling women, you know, see you next Tuesday, or, you know.
You save it for special occasions.
I save it for special occasions. But you know what? Her, and then her, did you see her tweet about, you know, these people who are being mean to me about my leisure wear? And I'm like, you know, you scream and proclaim that you're pro-America and all you do is America first and all this, but you're cheaply made, you know, Chinese, you know, it's probably made in Chinese sweatshops. And so what is this, you know, what about all these jobs and stuff for Americans? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Crickets.
That part.
Wait.
Crickets.
Yeah. Hold on. Crickets.
Yes. Crickets.
Well, I'm based on the prevalence of stories of women with concealed carry purses and concealed carry bras. If she actually wears it and concealed carries with it, I fully expect it reminded me of a modification of that line from Christmas Story. You know, when he asks Santa for the BB gun.
Yeah.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Yeah.
She's going to shoot her for JJO.
You'll shoot your cooch off, kid.
Well, when did I, you know, like, because she's so obsessed with black men. When did I write you? That's one way to get something.
Black between
when
you.
When did I write you?
Yes.
You know, stiffen. Mm-hmm. What is a stiffen? Hard and black.
Between you.
And between her legs.
Wait a minute. You get one of those, too. I've memorized where the crickets and the rim shot are.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, I got to tell you, you've got a long-distance dedication from Lady B out in Colorado. You know, because Lady B's a jock too.
Oh, she is. Okay.
She said, "Maybe you'll be the talking to me. Maybe you'll be the only one to get this." But the combo of Tracy getting in shape, listening to Steely Dan, and going to Vegas, I immediately thought,
She has the shapely bod. She's got the Steely Dan T-shirt. And for the coup de grace, she's outrageous. That, of course, is from Steely Dan's Showbiz Kids.
Yes.
That's perfect. You need to get that on a T-shirt, in fact.
Well,
maybe you could start your own athleisure line and license that from Steely Dan.
You know what? Remember we talked about me and my T-shirt, so I might be working on that. Speaking of Vegas. And I'm going to go, but I meant to take pictures of it, but I started eating it before I could. So there's this Italian restaurant in Paris, and what's the name of it? Mastrano's or something like that. Why, oh, why do they make their own, mozzarella cheese every day? That part.
Quit it. So,
they make their own mozzarella cheese every day. The hand stretched it and all that stuff.
So,
when I eat, there's very few people. See, we've never met, but we are kindred spirits. And so whenever I have certain food, I automatically think of you. And so they had a special when Jen and I went on Saturday. We went there Saturday. And so it was they did the fried mozzarella, which they don't do all the time. But, usually it's with a marinara sauce. Well, this time it was with a marinara, but it was with sausage, with homemade sausage.
Oh.
So it was that. And then I had the chicken parmesan, but instead of just regular, it was topped with ricotta cheese, tomato, two whole tomatoes, spinach, mushrooms, and then melted with mozzarella cheese on top. Had a pork chop with a Asian thing glazed with jalapeno peppers.
Oh, that gets me. I got all excited this weekend because a little aspect of civilization has arrived across the river in Fayetteville.
And what is that?
A little place called Kobe Asian Fusion has opened.
Ooh.
They're an offshoot of a couple of other restaurants in southern West Virginia. You can get real live, honest to God, half decent sushi in there. It's not like
nice.
it's not like grocery store or gas station sushi. And it's not okay Chinese super buffet been sitting out all day sushi either.
Oh God! Yeah. Ooh.
But I looked down the menu and son of a gun, there it was. Spicy ramen.
Ooh.
I ate it 2 days in a row. Yeah. It was so good. These big, beautiful, grilled, slightly sweet slabs of pork belly and some sliced carrots and a little bit of, I think, some corn and some tiny pieces of broccoli floret and shredded seaweed and chili paste. And really good quality noodles, and the pork bone tonkatsu broth that they say they make themselves. I was a real happy hillbilly.
Because it's the simple thing. I live in L.A., so it's stuff like that I take for granted because I live in L.A. Unfortunately, there's still dim sum in Chinatown, but most of the real Asian people have moved to the San Gabriel Valley. And so, like Rolling Heights and stuff like that. So all the really good dim sum is out there, and I'm not really feeling like driving to San Gabriel Valley. Fuck that. So, I don't really get dim sum like I used to. But again, if I want it, I can find it. I can get it because I live in L.A. Because there's this big, huge ramen explosion out here now. So there's ramen places there.
Oh,
you know?
ramen is such a fad now.
Right. It's everywhere, and so just depending on where you want to go and how, you know, I can have it delivered, you know, if I want to now. Grubhub and, you know, I just, so this is, I have access to, as a matter of fact, I was at my doctor's office, and I don't know whose magazine this was, but I pilfered it, I'm not going to lie. And it was from last year, and they did a whole, and see, you know, Bob Kincaid in the head. It was a whole issue on fried chicken in Los Angeles. And so they had all these different, and I'm not just talking like, you know, black people fried chicken. I'm talking about
is that a thing? Iterations.
What, black people fried chicken?
Yeah.
I'm just being, now you're fucking with me.
No, I mean, I thought fried chicken was fried chicken was fried chicken was fried chicken.
Oh, no. We got different, we got fried chicken from all over the world. We got fried chicken from Taiwan. We got Napa Valley fried chicken, Philippines, the chicken from the Philippines.
Well, I read an article a couple of years back saying that a couple of people were essaying to recreate Nashville-style hot chicken out in L.A.
Yes. As a matter of fact, this place called Gus's Fried Chicken. And it's because, like I said, there's this place called Old Napa Valley. So they have all these different places all over L.A. that has different types of fried chicken from various places across the country, across the world. And, you know, they have, like, Chinese fried chicken, Korean fried chicken, Japanese fried chicken. I mean, every different kind of fried chicken you can think of, it's just crazy. And so I'm going to have to get... So, see, what all this adds up to is, you know, the eventual Bob Kincaid here Los Angeles. And so don't you think that I'm not, I do keep notes of all the different places that I'm going to take you when you bring your happy pink ass out here. It's just a matter of, you know, how long you're going to be here. Cause I need you here for at least a week. Cause it's going to take about I guess we could do 4 days, but no, a week just for, you know, just doing the Raymond Chandler thing, because what we're going to have to plan out is, you know, the restaurants along all the place, you know, those places that, you know, the streets and stuff that you read about and stuff like that. And we can plan it out that way.
Ooh.
Because it can be.
And at some point we will drive west on Sunset to the sea.
Exactly. And
we will turn our jungle music down just until we're out of town.
Exactly. And we will, you know, and we will, and, you know, we plan it right. You know, we can, there goes those Santa Ana winds again. Here comes those Santa Ana winds
again. Yeah, now when do those happen?
About this time of the year. It's going from September through October, I believe, yeah. So, you know, which is a really nice time to come here. But so you know, as expensive and god-awful as it can be with traffic and stuff, I love my city.
Sure.
I'm truly a proud Angeleno. I can claim this is my birthright. I was born here. I'm a rare breed. I'm a second generation. For somebody my age, most of my friends that are my age are first generation, especially being black. Most of my friends, their parents came from the South. My mom was actually born here, which, you know, is definitely very rare indeed, because my dad wasn't born here. My dad was born in Missouri. So I'm actually a second generation Angeleno. So that's huge. So I have seen, you know, I've lived here all 53 years of my life.
Yeah, that's another T-shirt, born here.
you know, so when people say go back, I'm like, bitch, I was born here. So, take your ass back wherever you came from. You're the reason why the 405 is all backed up. So, it's like, you know, this is my home, and I love my home. I love, I love this city. It drives me crazy. It hurts my heart and my soul how expensive it is here, how people are conned into not voting for rent control. I just read this heartbreaking story about, it was about immigrant families who are being taken horribly advantage of, living, you know, in converted garages with, you know, no bathrooms and paying like, $1,500 a month for rent. And, you know, five members of a family.
And eventually that shit blows up. I mean, that is, one of the downsides, you know, housing, what is referred to euphemistically as affordable housing, that probably as much as climate in many ways, and to a certain extent, I guess they're interrelated, those are the dual powder kegs of California.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, this little Japanese joint that I'm so excited about, they do Thai and they do some traditional Chinese too. But they also have on the menu that they do pho. Which means that, like, Saturday morning pho brunch. Yeah, I'll be trying that too. You know how I loathe being cold. Well, I actually sat there over that bowl of ramen, thinking, you know, when it's really good and cold outside, this is going to warm a human being all the way down to his toenails. That could be a good thing.
See, this is, you know, I can eat soup set all the, you know, even when it's hot. I don't care. I love soup.
Yeah, I'm one of those people too.
With noodles. You know, Jen looks at me like I'm crazy when I want soup. She's like, "What the fuck is wrong with you? Is it 1,000 degrees outside?" I'm like, "But I don't care. I love soup." But you know, I'm weird. There's this certain thing.
Oh, and yesterday, those pork butts that I smoked last week.
Yeah.
I hacked up one of them yesterday, and made that hickory smoked pork fried rice that I had been threatening to make.
How did it turn out?
Oh, it was pretty good. It was pretty good.
Oh, I don't know. If Sparky is listening? Is Sparky in the chat room?
Not at the moment.
Okay. Well, just in case he's listening, I just want you to know, because I want him to know that I just watched. Last week's episode of Yellowstone yesterday.
Yeah.
And there's a scene. He's going to know what I'm talking about. Woo! And the only thing I could say is boutique and that's it. It's a boutique scene. And man, woo! Basically, because without giving it away, because people haven't seen it yet, but it's just about, it's something, what happens in that scene is what you wish could happen to every horrible person in the world when they do shitty things to people who don't deserve shitty things to happen to them.
Ooh, that sounds gratifying. Well, I had a message a while back from Arnold up in PA when we were talking about the Las Perlas thing.
Uh-huh.
And Arnold said, I'm friends with a trans couple, and this happened at a Five Guys. The same sort of thing with, you know, obnoxious people calling them, you know, men and man and, you know. And Arnold said, I went up to the counter, and I've met Arnold, and Arnold would do this. I went up to the counter without them, and I told the male who kept addressing the women as men that he would not like what happened to him if he kept it up. And you know, Arnold doesn't have a nickel's worth of back down in him. So.
Good. Well, speaking of that, what you just said, you're going to really appreciate an episode of Pose.
Well, we can start that now. Now that it's over and now that Agnes is home, we can start that.
Well, what you just said and about what I just said and what Arnold just said, what you just said about what Arnold said, there's an episode on Pose that you're going to really appreciate. And it's just Miss Electra being Miss Electra. And that's all I'm going to say.
Oh, that'll be good.
So just imagine Miss Electra in all of her glory being Miss Electra and putting people in their place, you know, so, when you said when you say when people, you know, referring to trans women as men, and so yeah, it's like you said, there was so much shade thrown. Forget 10 to 15 degrees. It was about 30 degrees below zero.
Well, Tracy, I'm glad you had a wonderful weekend. It's been a lovely conversation. Our best to Jan.
Yeah, I'm about to, speaking of which, I got to go get her creamer. I don't know, she's addicted. It's her coffee time. So, anyway, I'm out. Love you guys and talk soon.
All right, take care, Tracy. Later.
You too. Bye.
And that is the one and only Tracy. I'm just so proud for her, the hard work she's doing, and that takes a lot of commitment and dedication. And I have no doubt she will run that 5K. She will run every meter of it. Look at me being all metric. Woo. So the lines are open. If anybody else wants to engage in some conversation, you can get through on Skype, or you can always try the stress line. That, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. Is it? Have we got it tattooed into our? Apparently the rain's let up because, and I don't want to jinx anything, Frontier has stopped dropping out with every drop of rain. Hopefully it'll stay that way for the remainder of the program. It is Moran Monday. This one we could probably save for prayer meeting Wednesday, but again, we're going to have plenty of material by then, so it fits for Moran Monday as well. I guess it was Friday that the 6th United States Circuit Court of Appeals heard an appeal of, and it was pissing and moaning on the part of Sister Clerk Kim Davis, who has a free grifter lawyer by the name of Matt Staber from a grift called Liberty Council. And it's all tax-free, hallelujah. And the Commonwealth of Kentucky. The court below, you remember the Sister Clerk Kim Davis bullshit. She was out of Round County, Kentucky. She was the clerk there. It was her job to issue marriage licenses. And she decided that in the name of Jesus, she would not issue marriage licenses to gay couples. Well, a judge stuffed her in jail for contempt. And people like Pastor Brother, former governor, diabetes, snake oil cure salesman, Huxterby, father of Sarah, and this Matt Staver grift. They all pretended that, as far as they were concerned, that was the same thing as nailing her right in. Well, the courts didn't agree, and the courts stuffed her in jail for a little bit, like I said. Then they started entering judgments. Among other things, they entered a judgment against the Commonwealth of Kentucky, saying that because the gay couples that were discriminated against filed a lawsuit, rightly so. This was after the Obergefell decision. There was no question. And Sister Clerk Kim Davis decided to discriminate instead of quitting her job. If you can't do the damn job for whatever so-called moral reasons, as Lady B pointed out in a note over the weekend, quit! Go to work for one of these grifting outfits. I'm sure that... Right. But she didn't. And instead, she stuck to her she stuck to her bigotry. And so, since the plaintiffs had to expend about $225,000 in legal fees, the lower court and the U.S. Circuit Court affirming said, "Yep, the Commonwealth of Kentucky needs to pony up."
They lost again. This, of course, will once again go up before old Balls and Strikes and shoot him in the back of the head, Alito, and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and Ann's boy, Neil, and Brat Kavanaugh, who likes beer. And God only knows what'll happen. But the best part of it is that in the Sixth Circuit Court's opinion, they ruled that not only must the Commonwealth of Kentucky pay the $224,000 in legal costs, they also said that her capacity as Round County, Kentucky clerk gave her sovereign immunity from being sued, but she can be sued in her individual capacity. That means that the plaintiffs can go after any money that Sister Clerk Kim Davis has or will have as a result of her association with that whole godforsaken grift. And so no sooner was the order issued by the circuit court than Matt Staver, grifter-in-chief for Liberty Counsel, and Liberty Counsel, by the way, has been designated a hate group because they are. They immediately ran out and started fundraising on gay people's backs.
She risked everything she had rather than violate her conscience. She refused to endorse what God prohibits by issuing marriage licenses with her signature to same-sex couples.
Yeah, they've got pogo sticks and they get up on the cross in a real hurry at Liberty Council.
Not only that, but radical LGBT activists and their allies want revenge.
Revenge? No, they want the damages to which they are legally entitled because of the tortious conduct of Sister Clerk Kim Davis and her grifty lawyers. That's not revenge, that's justice. Nonetheless, writing to his millions of Emery's and Marvelines out there, head grifter at Liberty Council, Matt Staver, said,
"Will you donate now to help Kim through to victory and to help Liberty Council defend freedom, life, and merge in other cases across Merca?"
What did Dashiell Hammett say? The cheaper the hood, the gaudier the patter. One of these days we might get around to fixing the United States of America and some of the more profound problems we suffer. And one of those things is going to have to be making sure that grifts like Liberty Council can no longer exist. Claiming religion in order to raise tax-free money, in order to engage in bigotry, that just doesn't feel real constitutional to me. As James in Illinois puts it, subject line, Big Kim Davis, what part of no law respecting a religion do they fail to comprehend? I'm guessing none of it. Fuck her and fuck her so-called Liberty Council. Yes, with a white, and I do mean white, hot poker. Out in the great Northwest, Jimmy writes in, fried chicken. The A spot here in Seattle is called Brothers and Sisters, and it's Nashville-style fried chicken. That's good fried chicken. Mighty good. Closest I can get is KFC's Nashville Hot Chicken Strips. And the distance between that and real Nashville hot chicken is about the distance from here to Norblap 9. Let's run over and check in on the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, I am not giving them a discount on crucifixions.
No, Dave, if they don't have the coupon, they don't get the discount.
That's right. Well, especially Kim Davis. I mean, we're going to have to get the extra supports in just to keep her carcass up there.
Well, you'll probably have to install flying buttresses, and I do mean buttresses. That was an attempt at humor.
Well, you know, they might consider that a little too Catholic. I mean, they might think we're trying to build a cathedral or some such, and they might object on religious grounds.
Oh, it might violate their closely personally held religious beliefs and morals and values. Yeah.
What morals and values?
Yeah, fresh out.
And the check ain't cleared for me yet, so I'm still out there, you know.
I understand. So I understand there was another thing.
And this isn't even prayer meeting Wednesday.
Yeah. So I guess what, another, a grieved, angry maggot tried to run over people with his car in Bloomington, Indiana?
I didn't hear about this, but
yeah,
he did. I used to live down there, and there's a right-wing outfit called the World Church of the Creator. They're a Nazi-esque hate group that used to put flyers on people's cars. And one of their members, when I was living down there, killed a Korean student and killed a, went to Kentucky and killed a black athletic director. But when that was all done and he was killed, they wanted privacy to mourn their loss. And I think the best way to deal with these so-called religious grifts is do what Australia did. Australia was having a problem with the Church of Scientology claiming tax-exempt status. Well, the reason for the tax-exempt status in Australia was if churches are doing charitable work, you know, then you get the tax exemption. Have these churches prove that they're doing charitable work? Actually, have them open the books up.
Not a terrible idea. Well, this happened at the Bloomington Community Farmers Market, Dave. And what
I know where that's at.
So what had happened was, Antifa and No Space for Hate had gone there to protest because there's a farm that has a booth there that has been shown through discovered email and electronic traffic to likely have connections to white nationalist organizations.
Oh, God.
Yeah, white nationalist organic farmers, I guess.
And in a town like Bloomington, that can cause violence.
And so a 41-year-old guy by the name of Brad Clapper, and this is reporting from the Indiana Student Daily, the newspaper at Indiana University,
right,
drove a GMC Terrain toward the protesters near Blooming Foods before he jumped on the brakes.
Well, Bloomington Foods is a cooperative grocery.
Yeah, hold on. Lost it for a minute there.
It saddens me to hear that. It really does.
One woman who came near to getting run over, a woman by the name of Ashley Ang, Abby Ang, said, "I didn't see his car until he was right there. It's something that can happen very quickly." And he jumps out of the vehicle and he screams, "Get the fuck on the sidewalk!" And Abby Ang said his level of anger was very extreme. Clapper, meanwhile, said, "Well, maybe I'm naive. I just never felt like it was going to lead to anybody getting killed or sent to the hospital." Yeah, because when you threaten somebody with a big-ass SUV, yeah, no, that could never pop. No.
They could charge him with attempted vehicular homicide.
Well, what's interesting out of this is that supposedly he spoke with law enforcement, but when the young reporters from the Indiana Student Daily went to look, they couldn't find any evidence whatsoever of a police report.
It probably got buried, Bob. Bloomington has had some police corruption problems over the years.
Yeah, jeez.
You know, something might be under the police blotter and not seen for days, months, or years. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, great.
When I lived down there, the sheriff of Monroe County, that's the county Bloomington then, was under federal indictment for ghost employment. And Bloomington has traditionally been the one blue spot in a red state.
Yeah, because of the university.
And the community at large there, even when you get off campus, people are very warm, they're very welcoming, they're very inclusive. Christine and I, when we lived down there, felt very safe, very wonderful. Christine was a English major, and I was a education major, and we had the time of our lives. By the way, today would have been my 15th wedding anniversary to the beloved Christine. So it's been kind of a weird day.
I can understand.
But I heard you and Tracy talking about your food porn, and I've got one for you that Christine made for me a few weeks back.
Yeah.
She took a butt roast, a pork butt. Yeah. Put it in a slow cooker with unsalted butter and French onion soup mix top, and she just...
That sounds nice.
She cooked the hell out of that for 8 to 9 hours.
Oh, after about 8 hours in the crock pot, something like that will just fall apart.
And it was butter. You don't add any water. The butter was browned and nutty and beautiful. And it was juicy, and oh my God, Bob, it's one of those you get out the cat's head biscuits and you go to town.
Oh, man, yeah, oh, couple of nice biscuits. That'd be righteous. That would be righteous.
Right, so here, I mean, it's getting toward the fall. When it starts cooling off there in West Virginia, you might as well just, you know, hunkered down with a crock pot and just do that.
My salivary glands are working overtime just thinking about it. That sounds fantastic. And real easy when it's too cold to maybe go out and fire up the acorn.
Well, you know, is that when it gets to 30 below?
I've been known to smoke a brisket in 11 below, so we haven't really found it.
Well, see, I think you're just a guy with a toy. You know, it's like, no, but I really want to play with my grill.
Yeah, because I can't do that inside.
Right, but I'm sure Agnes has to look at you occasionally and say, Bob.
No, at this point.
Are you sure you really want to do that?
No, at this point in time, she's there's nothing to be done about him. It can't be helped. And the nice thing is, if you make your brine salty enough, it won't freeze in cold weather.
That's true, because of the salt, the amount of salt. Yeah.
Right, yeah. But we're gonna try that, Dave. I'm glad you called in, my friend.
I am too, Bob. I'm so glad to hear you, and you guys help keep me sane.
I'll be talking to y'all later. Y'all do the same for me, and I appreciate it. So you have yourself a good evening, and I'll let you know if we do up that crockpot butt.
Well, I'll remind you closer to Christmas.
Okay,
that's
sounds
really
good.
That's the time to do it.
All right, sounds good. Take care, Dave. Bye now.
All right, Bob. Bye.
And that's our buddy Dave calling from the blind in Taliban, Indiana. I guess just as Benghazi will never fully go away, neither will the Seth Rich conspiracy theory. So Rudy Giuliani, you remember when, Larry Kudlow showed up, what was it, last weekend, and seemed like he was a little more than half in the bag when he was slurring and talking about dim leaders, magnificent, monumental economic leadership. There are more than a few rumors that Rudy gets a little sideways, too. So Rudy retweeted a Seth Rich conspiracy theory. And I don't have to go over that, do I? You know who Seth Rich was. And so when the Daily Beast got hold of him and asked him about the retweet, he said, "I didn't support any conspiracy theory. I raised several nagging coincidences." And what he had retweeted was, "I was walking home on a hot July night in 2016. I was shot, with a capital S, shot, multiple times in torso. I worked for the DNC. I still had my wallet, cash, credit cards, phones, watch, necklace. They called it a botched robbery and sue anyone who investigates it. Who am I?" Yeah, Giuliani said he raised nagging coincidences. And then when the Daily Beast published the article, he wrote him again and said the following, because the goddess of irony can be cruel, and those Freudian slips have a way of showing. "Either you haven't been trained in proper seductive reasoning, or the most truthful explanation is irrelevant." Yeah. Seductive reasoning. Maybe he's been hanging out too long with, Julius Caesar. Seductive reasoning. And then, of course, a little update. We had this. Now, I didn't get to the story last week of the white lady in Marysville City, Michigan. She's a cranky looking human being. They had a public forum in Marysville last Thursday. And she said, she was asked a question about her attitudes toward people of color in the community. And she said she likes her town the way it is and that she would work to keep Marysville, and this is a quote, "as white as possible." Well, the story got kind of viral.
with good reason, because that wasn't all she said. She said that people engaged in interracial marriages were in the wrong. She said that foreigners should go back and fix their countries before they ever come here. If their countries were fixed, well, never mind. Well, today she sent a letter withdrawing from the city council race. Sometimes there's just... the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. And then, as we move toward the end of this War End Monday, I would be completely remiss if I left out the story that broke over the weekend that the alleged president of the United States of America wants to nuke a hurricane. Because he wants to nuke something. It's one of those believe them when they tell you who they are moments. Early on, he asked what was the point of having a nuclear arsenal if you couldn't use it on somebody. And no small number of military types and not crazy people were more than a little bit alarmed by that attitude.
I mean, how will we even know if they work if we don't use them?
And so he's kind of had nukes on the... Well, I was about to say nukes on the brain, but you'd have to have a brain to have nukes on it. Let's say the spirochetes are a little bit obsessed with nukes. And so during a briefing about the an approaching hurricane... And remember, this is actually memorialized in a National Security Council briefing document, because hurricanes hitting the United States are a national security matter. He is quoted as actually saying,
"I got it, I got it. We'll drop a nuke in the eye of the hurricane, and that'll keep it from hitting the United States. You know, they form over there by Africa. We could drop it and disrupt it before it ever gets started."
And the punchline to all of this is that his fawning, probably terrified, national security staff responded to him by saying, probably in their best Smithers voice, "Yes, sir. We'll definitely look into that, sir."
Good. You know, I'm a very stable genius. I have the best mind. I have great genes.
And now that the story's broken, he's declared that it's fake news, even though it comes from a national security document.
I want to nuke a hurricane. I want to nuke something. Can we nuke Puerto Rico?
And the worst part of all of this is that it kind of gives you a sense of where and how what passes for his mind works. He's literally, and it's, remember that we can't do it.
We're going to use fucking steam catapults. Steam, beautiful steam.
He's 40 years behind. He can't imagine, he doesn't know, he quit learning no less than 40 years ago to the extent that he, well, learned anything at all. Because back in the genesis of this idea, does Genesis qualify as an obligatory Star Trek reference this evening? I'm not sure. Goes back to the Eisenhower administration when the whole nuclear world was bright and shiny and new. Who knows? Who knew what radioactive isotopes could do for humanity if put to work in the service of good? Do you remember the Gilligan's Island episode where the radiated seeds wash up on the island and they grow carrots? I don't know, what was it, carrots that were 5 feet long or something like that? And then the castaways ate them, and I mean, it, obviously, that was just a silly comedy. But there was scientific curiosity as to whether, you know, we might be able to really do amazing stuff. And so, in the 50s, in the Eisenhower administration, somebody came up with the brilliant idea of dropping a nuclear weapon on a hurricane. And somewhere along the way, he heard that, and it stayed on one of those poor, shrieking spirochetes. It was 1956 when a meteorologist named Jack Reed mentioned the idea of nuking a hurricane. Then he tried it again in 1959 as a presentation for something called Project Plowshare, named after beating one's swords into plowshares as a means of finding peaceful uses for nuclear technology. And Project Plowshare, according to this article from Vice, was just nuts. They wanted to use nuclear explosions to generate seismic energy. They wanted to use nuclear blasts to affect a hurricane, which is monumentally more powerful in terms of, you know, just raw energy than any nuke. They wanted to maybe use nuclear blasts to generate steam for electric power. And 27 nukes were actually exploded in Nevada, New Mexico, and Colorado between 1961 and 1973 in an insane attempt to see if that could be done. They wanted to excavate with nukes. They wanted to widen the Panama Canal with nukes. At one point in time, we even considered nuking the moon. Just for the sake of creating a mushroom cloud in space that was visible on Earth. And the guy who wanted to nuke hurricanes only died in 2007, and he never gave up on the idea. Speaking to the Albuquerque Journal in 2004, he said, "The physics of this scheme has never been seriously questioned. It's just that using nukes to stop hurricanes has become politically incorrect." That's not true. Because the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, actually has a page on, it's an FAQ on stupid things people believe about the weather, and front and center to it all is, no, we can't nuke a hurricane. Because the same prevailing winds that drive the hurricane would drive, among other things, the fallout toward the target that the hurricane was aimed for in the first place. And the only people who believe that's fake news, of course, are the maggots. The rest of us know he is that crazy. Ah, there it is. There it is. Yeah. I knew Lee would remember. Lee in New York. The Gilligan's Island episode. Marianne ate carrots and got extreme vision. Gilligan ate spinach and got extreme strength. Lovey Howell ate beets and had extreme energy. Yeah, sugar beets. Meanwhile, Donald Trump thinks Gilligan's Island is a documentary series. Because it's all reality television to him. You know, we're almost done with the month of August. And we're pretty much almost done with summer. And I already miss that exquisite warmth. And it seems to have flown by. It seems to get faster every day. But the other side of that coin is that with madness like this, fake phone calls from China, nuking hurricanes, I was only
kidding when I said I was the chosen one. Everybody knew I was being sarcastic.
And yet it's on video and nobody's laughing. And he's not smirking. And we get up every morning to see what the horror du jour is. And then we get together. For those who listen live of an evening, but those who listen to the podcast whenever. And hopefully we take a little solace. Maybe we laugh a little bit. Cuss and carry on. And we keep our death grip on our sanity as we ride this hellbound train toward November of 2020 and the awful revelation of whether we will be damned or saved. And I thank you all for joining on that little train ride. As I mentioned to Dave, I thank you for helping keep me sane. And if we all do it for each other, we got a fighting chance of making the trip. Last word goes to James in Illinois, the vacant look in his eyes. Have you noticed that dry, drunk look in his eyes when he talks about nukes? He needs to be told if and when he ever issues the order that the football is out of order, missing, or loaned out. Yeah, we can't find it anywhere, sir. Have you tried
powering down your phone and powering it back up. Ain't that the truth, James? So thanks to all of you for keeping this program on the air. Thanks for sharing your precious finite time engaging in it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks earlier in the evening to Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. A reminder, Dr. Bill, after a long traveling absence, was back today, and he'll be back this week, and he came back swinging. So by all means, check out the podcast. You can find it there at headon.live via a number of platforms. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.